the Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 125, we discuss our thoughts about the final day of coverage of the Bundesliga season, who's leaving beIN Sports for new job opportunities, which club has a new behind-the-scenes documentary that's heading to Amazon Prime, which TV network La Liga and the Bundesliga needs to move to next year, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Now, Kartik, we're entering a new phase of the soccer season. Most of the European leagues are over. Some of the European Cup competitions, like the finals, are being prepared for this weekend. Copa del Rey, the DFL Pokal Cup, and of course the Champions League final before you know it, as well as the Europa League final. So in this new phase, it's going to be kind of a transition, I think, for the viewers too and the listeners in terms of watching different types of soccer and so maybe different types of soccer that they're not accustomed to watching as much. Of course, you got the Women's World Cup coming up. You got Copa America. You got the Gold Cup. You got the African Cup of Nations, as well as the FIFA U20 tournament in the World Cup. So plenty of things to choose from. But as one example, Kartik, I looked at the schedule just a few minutes ago before we went on air for Major League Soccer. I thought, okay, this is going to be a perfect time now to for Major League Soccer to ramp up its coverage. For those viewers that are tuning in weekends, religiously watching soccer, here's an opportunity for them to go ahead and watch a bunch of games. So this weekend, ESPN and ESPN2 have zero games from Major League Soccer. They do have the next game that they will show is, I think, June 1st. Now, and then on the Fox side, on the English language side, FS1 has one game on Sunday night, and then they have no game the following weekend. So it's almost as if, you mean, Major League Soccer kind of slows down. And as far as the scheduling, to me, it doesn't make any sense at all. Here's a perfect opportunity to go ahead. That transition period is you know, have a double header, have some different games going on. Now, on the Spanish language side, they have, I think, two games on Friday night, one on Saturday. So the Spanish language side gets it. The English language side doesn't. Any idea why this is the way it is, Kartik, in terms of the scheduling?
I have no idea. There must be something going on in American sports that I'm unaware of. I guess NBA, maybe. NHL is on NBC, so it couldn't be that. I'm not sure. Honestly.
Yeah, there's definitely the NBA playoffs, but I still would think that that wouldn't be a major factor in this. I would think that, I don't know, that's always puzzled me. Sometimes, you mean, you would think the logic for Major League Soccer, the logic is there to go ahead and make smart decisions, but sometimes in terms of scheduling, it seems really strange, just really off, and it's really a missed opportunity. Now, speaking of missed opportunities from this past week, there were some teams in the EFL, I mean, the League One, League Two, Championship, missed opportunities to progress to the playoff final for a chance to get promoted to the next tier. Out of all of the games you saw, Kartik, in terms of these playoff matches, any that stood out for you?
Yeah, I think the second leg of Charlton Doncaster, which was at the Valley, was really, really good. I got the sense that we saw Charlton very confident. They finished the year really, really well. The regular season, Kenny Jackett had made a decision to rotate his squad on the final match day, therefore opening the door for Charlton to take third. Pompey falls to fourth. They lose to Sunderland. They get eliminated by Sunderland. A lot of second guessing of Kenny Jackett, who's done a brilliant job this season, as he normally does. Most places he's the manager. Because of that. So Charlton then takes care of business first leg against Doncaster. You're thinking, okay, this is straightforward. You wanted to draw Doncaster rather than draw Sunderland. And then the second leg, all heck broke loose. So I thought that was very good. And then the other match that was, to me, quite good. And so Doncaster won the second leg, just for those who don't know, went all the way to penalties. And had away goals applied, as they once did in the playoffs, Doncaster would have advanced because they had three away goals. The first leg had been 2-1 for Charlton. The other one was obviously the two legs of West Brom, Aston Villa, but both were marred by sending offs for West Brom players and Hal Robson Condu being suspended. So West Brom not at full strength. Now they're in a position where they will have to break up that team because they kept a Prem-heavy team, a high-wage team for the championship together this season.
Yeah, and those playoff finals will be – all of them are going to be on ESPN+. So you've got games on Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Monday's the big one, of course, Aston Villa against Derby County. You've got the other matches too. So if you're interested in playoff finals at Wembley, which usually are just back and forth, end-to-end action, open-ended matches, really fantastic atmospheres, definitely check those out on ESPN+ this weekend. The Bundesliga. Let me step back a second. So this past weekend, it was another crazy youth soccer weekend for me. Went up to the Orlando area for a tournament. This weekend coming up too, I've got another tournament for another one of my kids up at Disney. So it's going to be another weekend of just running around from game to game, and basically playing chauffeur, taking my kids to these games and stuff. But so I missed the FA Cup final. And I was talking to some of the parents. I was kind of watching the score on the sidelines, and talking to some of the parents, and it was like, I think 2-0, 3-0, 4-0. And I'm like, oh, to me, this wasn't even worth watching. I had no intention of going back to watch this game just because it was such a blowout. Was it that way, Kartik? Was it one of those games where it was so one-sided, or was it more to this game than the scoreline shows?
So first off, I was on a team bus with Miami FC going to the Orlando area as well. So I was watching it on an iPad and had watched the Bundesliga. We'll get into the Bundesliga in a minute because another talking point from my streaming Bundesliga experience in a minute. So there was I guess I would say like a 10 or 15 minute period, maybe from minute 15 to minute 30, or maybe minute 10 to minute 25, where it seemed like Watford was very much in the match. Their fans were alive. I mean, this was a Wembley day for them. Obviously, Watford is one of the closest, probably the closest top-flight club to Wembley, and one of the closest clubs, period, to Wembley. So they were in full voice. It was a short trip for them. It's like a trip down the street, literally, for one of us in the U.S. That was entertaining. Then City got the first goal and it was just lights out, and it was not worth watching after that, although there was some very good interplay. I thought one of the more significant things that happened, I should also say, right after halftime, Watford came out and played, looked pretty good, looked like they were attacking. They were leaving gaps at the back for counterattacks, but they were in the match, at least from a playing standpoint, down 2-0, and Guardiola makes a change, brings De Bruyne on, and that kind of shuts the door again. Broadcast note on this, again, Stuart Robson is paired with Martin Tyler, and Tyler now has leaned on Robson on VAR a lot because, as he said during the broadcast, you cover leagues in Europe that have now had VAR for a year or more. In the case of the Bundesliga, Robson has done a fair amount of Bundesliga matches. I bring it up every time, Chris, but I think it's such a miss that the Premier League, for whatever reason, Premier League Productions, who we'll have some news about shortly, have cut Stuart Robson out of their broadcast plans, because there is and I know this is controversial, he's very, very polarizing, as we know, and as even talking with some of the people at ESPN, they've told us that when he's on ESPN FC, it's polarizing. We've talked to executives all over the business about this, but there are little nuggets of insight and information and historical data or historical anecdotes that he gives that a lot of other guys don't. So yep. That's why I was able, the rest of the bus trip, again, we're going to Orlando, I'm with a team, which includes a couple of, Paul Dalglish is our manager, Kenny Dalglish's son, who's played in the Premier League, and who's played in the lower divisions of English football. And Lloyd Sam's on the bus with me. He's played in the Premier League. He's played in lower divisions of English football. So there's some genuine curiosity on the bus about this. this match. Robson kept it interesting for me, if I'm going to be quite honest.
I wonder, though, with Stuart Robson, whether he's actually, whether he's really happy with doing what he's doing, because maybe he thinks, in terms of not doing the Premier League, that he has a specialty, which he does, in terms of the English language analysis of Serie A and the Bundesliga, especially both those two leagues. And he adds something to broadcast when he does, you know, FA Cup final or other big games, you mean World Cups or whatever it may be, where perhaps he's definitely more knowledgeable about those leagues, those players, and it's kind of a specialization really for Stuart Robson. Now, for the Premier League and the reasons that he's not doing the Premier League games, maybe it's by choice. Maybe he's been offered them and he's not interested. We know that he is a polarizing figure. We don't know the details of why he isn't doing Premier League matches, but maybe it's a conscious decision. Maybe it's a choice that he's made.
Yeah, it's possible. He actually, believe it or not, does a fair amount of Major League Soccer. And when he's come over to the States to do ESPN FC, displays a knowledge of Major League Soccer that I think even blows away his American counterparts or Americanized counterparts on the set. So yep. He's following football from all over. And as I said, he must call – I know he does call a few MLS games a year for the audience in the UK and the international audience. But he has a knowledge of the league beyond just calling a few matches.
So basically, while I was away in Orlando at the soccer games, I came back from the game to the hotel for I think about an hour, and I was able to tune in on Saturday morning to watch some of the Bayern Munich against Frankfurt game from on Big Fox, and I was watching this through Fubo in my hotel, and I was impressed. From what I saw, the little that I saw, Keith Costa is going to enjoy, of course, on the commentary. Excellent work by both of them, who I believe both of them are at the top of their game. Really good stuff. And when Fox wants to up their game on the Bundesliga studio coverage, they do well. I mean, from what I saw in terms of the studio set, everyone seemed to be knowledgeable, excited. It was a good look. Now, whether or not, and I guess we've talked about this endlessly, but the challenge has always been is that consistency. You might have a great studio presence one week, the next there's no studio presence at all, and all the games are on FS2. But from what I saw, it was good stuff. What was your take on it, Kartik?
Yeah, so again, I'm on a bus and I tried streaming the game, and I was more focused on Mönchengladbach and Dortmund, obviously. Dortmund got the result, so then Bayern, Eintracht became important, and obviously Bayern put them to the sword. But what had happened, and I'm not sure if anyone from Fox is listening or can give technical assistance on this, I wasn't able to stream the match on my device because it said I needed to be on Wi-Fi. There was no Wi-Fi on the bus. Now we have a Wi-Fi hotspot that we set up the media team with Miami FC. Once I got on that, I was able to stream the matches. So I don't know if it was the amount of bandwidth available on my phone in the areas I was at, which was leaving Miami, going through Fort Lauderdale, going through Palm Beach. By the time we got north of Palm Beach, Bundesliga was done. So it was basically in a metropolitan area, or if it was. That's the way it is. You have to be on Wi-Fi to stream Fox Sports Go. In any event, I was able to do it and watch it. I thought their coverage was outstanding. Unfortunately, from my standpoint, I want to see someone else win the league other than Bayern. But what we've seen this week that's really interesting is Borussia Dortmund make finishing second lightly. I mean, they've gone out and made two massive signings right away in Julian Brandt, who I think – I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but it's not a shot at Christian Pulisic, who ended the season very well and played very well on Saturday again. But I think it's an upgrade over Pulisic. It's going to be a little more consistent, is a little more versatile. And then also Thorgan Hazard, who I think is kind of a similar player to Pulisic. Maybe not quite as good, but still pretty good. Eden Hazard's brother. So those are two players that look to be coming into Borussia Dortmund that are going to make this title race next year, with Ribery and Robin leaving, which that was a big story, right? Storyline of that Bundesliga coverage on Fox.
Right.
Make the league potentially more competitive next year. We'll see who Bayern signs. Hudson-Odoi was in their plans. Obviously, that's done now with his ACL tear. So we'll see what they do.
Yeah, the timing was ideal for the Bundesliga because they go into this next season in their last year of the contract with Fox Sports, most of which is globally, and it's an opportunity for viewers and I think for broadcasters too. It gives us hope that perhaps there is a team that might topple Bayern Munich off the perch in terms of in the kind of really a monopoly in the Bundesliga. There's an opportunity that maybe it's Dortmund, maybe it's another team, maybe it's RB Leipzig, or maybe it's somebody else that can go ahead and knock Bayern Munich down. So timing-wise, in terms of the television coverage and negotiations for contracts, you mean for television and streaming, it makes the Bundesliga slightly more appealing. Now, whether or not Bayern Munich will win it next season, it's very likely. But it does give us a little bit of hope that in previous seasons we haven't had to come down to the very final day, which was exciting stuff. And I thought, again, Keith Costigan and Ian Joy did a great job in the commentary, kind of really building up the excitement. And at the end of the game, it just seemed to be a very one-sided game at the end. But at times, it looked like Frankfurt could cause an upset there.
Although Frankfurt completely ran out of gas this season, right?
I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you look at Europa League, they lost like the last five games.
Yeah. So one more game I saw from this past weekend was U.S. Women's National Team against New Zealand. Ian Dark and Julie Foudy. It's always a joy to listen to the commentary because it just seems to be more of a conversation, just the two of them just talking back and forth. Both of them are experts in the game. Both of them are very knowledgeable. Both of them are very listenable. The only thing, I mean, the opponents, you mean New Zealand, I didn't think it was that strong, but good to see the U.S. women's national team doing well there and then going into the send-off series, going into the Women's World Cup around the corner, but I enjoyed that one. Anything else you'd like to add, Kartik, before we move on?
Yeah, I've tried watching a little bit of the Dutch Eredivisie playoffs, and they've been fairly entertaining when I've watched them. They're on ESPN Plus. It unfortunately ended up being busier this week than most weeks during the day, so haven't really watched them very closely. But I've been impressed by the technical skill and the organization of the teams we've seen in those playoffs, which – again, we know the Dutch league is on its way back up, right? And Ajax, it's a deep run in Champions League, I don't think was a fluke. And we're seeing the development of young Dutch footballers again and populating the best teams in Europe. So that's a league to keep an eye on. And ESPN Plus, again, as we talked about last week, developing a portfolio that's reaching critical mass of soccer coverage, at least European soccer coverage.
What I like about the Dutch league, the Eredivisie, is are the stadiums and the atmosphere. So, I mean, everything from De Kuip, the Feyenoord stadium, to others which are pretty small and intimate, almost looks like a second division or a third division English ground. And, of course, the passion, the fans, the songs. It's an enjoyable league. For me, personally, it's difficult to watch as much Dutch football as I'd like just because there's so many other leagues to watch, too. But from time to time, it's definitely a nice pleasure there to watch that one. So let's move on to TV streaming news and a story that we had an exclusive on this week, and it's a big one.
Yeah, Kev Egan and Terry Lee are both leaving beIN Sports. Kev Egan, I understand, as you've reported, will be obviously continuing as Atlanta United's announcer and be working for Atlanta United. It is interesting timing. It is the end of the European season, the end of La Liga, which ended this past week, and a sign that things not all as well at beIN Sports. And I would watch this space because I know, Chris, you and I have heard rumblings that there might be more, more departures. And unfortunately, beIN, the combination of the carriage dispute with Comcast and with AT&T and and just the escalating cost of rights and retaining rights to certain leagues. We saw this with Serie A and with the English Champion or the Football League leaving the network in the last two summers. That there's just things don't seem good over there.
Yeah, the hope is that beIN Sports will bounce back. The hope is that they will find a way to renew the rights with DirecTV, who positions themselves as the leader of soccer coverage, which they used to be many years ago. These days, not so much, because in addition to beIN Sports, there's some other channels that they're missing on the soccer side of things. So this DirecTV is very much a different DirecTV. This really is AT&T. And as a result of that, beIN Sports is not on DirecTV or AT&T UVerse, et cetera, et cetera. And also then you got the Comcast. So it's unfortunate. I mean, hopefully things will turn around. But yeah, with Kevin Egan and Terry Lee, two of their best presenters of sports, whether it's soccer or world sports. And from what I understand, which the article is on worldsoccertalk.com on the homepage, it goes into more detail. But there's definitely some issues behind the scenes at beIN Sports, which I think prompted these two to leave. And as you said, Kartik, there's a possibility of more leaving in the near future, too. So the second story we had this week in terms of the TV streaming news, and this is another exclusive to worldsoccertalk.com, is that Univision hasn't officially announced the Gold Cup TV schedule yet. But at worldsoccertalk.com, we have the schedule. And interestingly, for this Gold Cup, so Univision, of course, lost the rights to the World Cup, so they wouldn't have coverage to the Women's World Cup this summer. They don't have the rights to Copa America. So what we have is Univision announcing 16 games on over-the-air Univision, on their free-to-air over-the-air channel, 16 games of the Gold Cup. And then all of the others will either be on UNIMAS or Univision Deportes Network. So it's a big statement of intent here from Univision in terms of the Gold Cup coverage. If you compare that to Fox Sports, obviously Fox Sports has a lot going on with the Women's World Cup at the same time. And Fox's coverage, a lot of the games are on FS2. I think some are on FS1. I think some even on Fox Soccer Plus. So Univision coming out with a strong statement in terms of the schedule. And we have the Gold Cup schedule on the website, as well as we have a combined one. So we've combined the Gold Cup, Copa America, and the Women's World Cup all into one schedule. So you can see when the games are on each day. At the height of the tournaments, because all three of them overlap in different ways, at the height of the tournament, there are as many as 6 to 7 games a day. So basically from kind of mid-morning Eastern time all the way up through till midnight, one after another. And of course, in these tournaments, all three of them have the finals on the same day, which is crazy, 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 crazy. But we've got them there at worldsoccertalk.com. Now, Kartik, some news about the Premier League.
Yeah, the Premier League has come to a new agreement with IMG that will see the two organizations continue to work together to operate Premier League productions for the next three seasons, which spans the new television contract, by the way. Every time they do this, Chris, they have some new graphics. So I'm looking forward to that at the beginning of next year. Every time they go in one of these three-year cycles with Premier League productions. PLP produces and distributes all of the Premier League's international programming, including all 380 Premier League matches in a season. In addition, there are 7 magazine shows each week, as well as the Premier League content service, which is run by some of the league's broadcast partners as a full 24/7 channel. And you get a lot of that content, by the way, on NBC Sports Gold. I'm not trying to plug NBC Sports Gold, but that's one advantage of buying that service that a lot of people don't talk about, is that you get a number of those programs. Not all of them, though, but a number of them. The service offers international broadcast partners a combination of studio-based output, including high-quality pre- and post-match content, regular news shows, additional magazine programming, international phone-ins, and matches from the Premier League's extensive historical archive. New agreement will also see 76 matches per season in 4K UHD, which is really cool.
Yeah, and that's probably the biggest news out of that announcement, is the 76 games per season in 4K Ultra HD. So that's, I mean, for those of us who have 4K televisions, that is fantastic news. And anything in terms of the production, the coverage from IMG, as it's beams all these Premier League games around the world, and then NBC will pick up that feed, and then we'll add on, I mean, their commentary feed with Arlo, or add their graphics, their advertising at the top. It's always quality, very high-level quality, one of the best in the world, probably on a rival with the Bundesliga in terms of their coverage. So that's good news that relationship continues. Now, the next news item is something we've talked about a bunch of times on this podcast, and it's been a while since we've discussed it because it hasn't been announced officially yet. But back March 20th, which seems so long ago, we broke a story on worldsoccertalk.com that mentioned about how ESPN Plus had acquired the English language and Portuguese language rights to Copa America. So here we are recording this podcast, May 22nd, a couple months after we posted the story, and yet ESPN has still yet to officially announce that they're going to have these games. So according to my sources, we're 100% convinced and sure that this will happen. And I believe it's just a matter of timing in terms of when ESPN, timing-wise, is ready to announce this. Probably a lot of this will be CONMEBOL, where CONMEBOL wants to sync up kind of some announcements and have a strategy of when both CONMEBOL and ESPN can announce this at the same time. So it looks like ESPN is sitting on the news, waiting for it to officially happen. But because you, the listener, and you, the reader for worldsoccertalk.com, you've got a heads up to know that ESPN Plus is going to have this in addition to all the other rights that they already have. Going back to the Premier League, Kartik, some more big news for them.
Yeah, so they have a valuation that's up 8%, 9.8. £2 billion on overseas income. A rise of over a third in the international broadcast fees for the Premier League drove an 8% increase in the property's total rights value for this next broadcast package from 2019 to 2022 to $11.7 billion dollars compared with the previous cycle. It should be noted that the broadcast fees, the rights fees, have become stagnant in the domestic market, but in the international market they continue to grow pretty rapidly. So that's part of the reason you see more emphasis from the Premier League on the international market. They've always been a very international league, right? Perhaps the most international league of them all. But the growth now is almost entirely outside the United Kingdom.
And the last piece of news is that Borussia Dortmund has announced a four-part documentary series that will be launched in over 200 countries on August the 9th, exclusively on Amazon Prime Video. The film, as yet entitled, will feature behind-the-scenes footage from the 2018-2019 season, all the way to the very end, where they almost won the Bundesliga title. So something to keep an eye out for if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber. Moving on to TV ratings, we don't have a bunch this week just because there weren't as many games on television. But the two that stood out were Bayern Munich against Frankfurt, the big game on Big Fox on Saturday to decide the Bundesliga title. 413,000 viewers for this one, which is a pretty decent number. It's greater than the Major League Soccer game that was on the week prior on Big Fox. So big ups there to the Bundesliga. I'm sure they'll be happy with that. And then the second game was New York Red Bulls against Atlanta on FS1. This was on this past Sunday on FS1 from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern time. 147,000 viewers for that one. Now, Kartik, I've been thinking a little bit in terms of the next MLS TV deal. Of course, the rights are going to be coming up soon. From what I understand, discussions have already started, at least preliminary discussions talking about the next rights deal. And I think in previous podcasts, I was pretty much down on Major League Soccer in terms of the opportunity for them to increase the rights fees for this. But the more I think about it, the more I analyze this, I think it, in many ways, because of the 2026 World Cup and because of the potential for U.S. men's national team, as well as the potential success of continued success of the U.S. women's national team, especially this summer, that as long as the rights deals for U.S. soccer, both the men's and women's, are coupled and combined with Major League Soccer, the actual value of these ratings should go up, because you're going to have hopefully the U.S. men's national team hopefully qualifying for the 2022 World Cup, and then hopefully from then on it's going to be a snowball effect where they're going to keep on building the excitement and hoping that U.S. men's national team will ride that wave. At the same time, if the U.S. women's national team, if they do win this World Cup this summer and continue to build their audience and generate more revenue for U.S. Soccer Federation, that both the U.S. women's national team and the U.S. men's national team could ride this wave into the 2026 World Cup. And the MLS can really just kind of ride along behind them, taking a lot of the value, increased value expectations for this deal. Now, if those deals are cut apart and done separately, and say, I mean, the sports broadcasters or Major League Soccer says, okay, we're going to go ahead and sell the MLS TV rights as a separate package to the U.S. women's team and U.S. men's team, which I think is extremely unlikely. In many ways, Major League Soccer and U.S. Soccer, through their partnership with some, are joined at the hip. But if those deals were separate, it would be a completely different story. And there'd be a lot of questions asked about kind of the value of Major League Soccer in terms of the amount of money that they're paying and the return in the actual TV ratings and really, for the most part, disappointing returns, especially on the English language side. What's your take on this, Karthik? Do you agree? We haven't had a chance to talk about this. Do you see any pitfalls here? What are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you. I think the rights will go up this cycle. I have a fundamental moral objection to the rights being coupled together, and I think it's something I've articulated. Those of you who follow me on Twitter or follow my writing realize where I stood on this issue for many years, which is that I believe that the no bid contract that's Soccer United Marketing, which is a marketing arm of Major League Soccer, gets from U.S. Soccer to sell the rights to the U.S. Soccer Federation's to their inventory of rights, men's and women's national team, and other inventory, now including the U.S. Open Cup, apparently, it constitutes a subsidy from U.S. Soccer to Major League Soccer, a subsidy that they're not giving to other professional leagues, that they're not giving to adult amateur leagues, that they're not giving to people in the youth soccer space and other stakeholders. So I have a fundamental moral objection to it. I think it's done in a way that it's not done in the rest of the world, where you couple those rights together and you don't include USL, you don't include NPSL or UPSL or any other league. NISA is now a sanctioned league that intends to begin play this season, this year. You don't include any of those rights in the bundle. So I think that's a fundamental problem. But yeah, I see the rights going up because the 2026 World Cup is going to be used as a trigger and as a propaganda piece by U.S. Soccer and Soccer United Marketing to say this sport's going to explode in a way it never has before. And look at the growth that came after the 94 World Cup. Look at the growth that came after the 99 Women's World Cup, which was held in the United States. Now, we were at a much lower base when the 94 and 99 events took place than we are now. So I've questioned the logic behind saying this. However, and there are far more soccer fans now who have been exposed to soccer around the globe, whereas in, you know, let's take right after the Women's World Cup in 1999, we were in our infancy in actually seeing the effect of the internet. The internet wasn't around in 94, and in 99 we were in infancy and seeing the effect of the internet even as a tool to just kind of read match reports from England or Germany, like, or Australia or wherever. Yeah, right, AOL, et cetera. And I mean, I used to read SoccerNet in those days, which is now ESPN FC.
Yeah, me too.
Which gave us very kind of basic. It was a partnership between the Daily Mail and CBS Sportsline, I think, at the time. Gave us some very basic information. Now we're so much further along, Chris. I don't think it has quite the impact broadcasters and people in the game are hoping it will have. I don't think it will have that. However, that will be discovered in 2026. This round of negotiations, this contract expires in 2022. I expect that fee to go up pretty substantially because of the promise of 2026.
imagine the discussions at, say ESPN, Major League Soccer comes to visit them, or it's probably the other way around. ESPN goes to visit Major League Soccer, and they have a conversation about the next rights deal. And this is all hypothetical, of course. So imagine if Major League Soccer says, okay, guys, ESPN, are you interested in showing some of these U.S. men's national team games in the run-up to the World Cup? So from, you mean, after the Qatar, you got 2023, 2024, 2025, going into that World Cup where the excitement levels, the hype, really is going to be a lot of hype, going into that 2026 World Cup is going to be through the roof. Even where we are today, that's going to go up considerably, definitely. Everyone's going to be talking about it. What's this World Cup thing? You mean, it's coming at us. And Major League Soccer says, okay, so if you want these games, these U.S. men's national team send-off series and friendlies and all these games, these big games coming up, you have to sign the deal with Major League Soccer. So the only way to get that access to those U.S. men's national team games is you also need to acquire the rights to these Major League Soccer games. It's all one package. Here's all the great things that we're going to be offering you as far as, all the bells and whistles, and this is how great it's going to be. So in many ways, if you're ESPN or you're Fox or you're Univision, I see all three of those partners continuing the relationship that they have with U.S. Soccer and with Major League Soccer, because that whole package is combined into one. And of course, I'm sure there'll be some sweeteners in terms of the local TV rights and other things to add more value, just to make sure that these broadcasters are as pleased as happy as can be, and also to elevate that number, that rights fee number. And when it happens, it's going to be major headlines. I can see it now. Major League Soccer announces major TV deal that increases the rights deal from the last round, the current one that we have, to the new one by, 10%, 15%, 20%, whatever it may be, when we all know it's based on U.S. soccer. It's based on the hope, the dreams that this U.S. soccer team, especially playing at home in the 2026 World Cup, can go all the way or go pretty far in this tournament. That's my take on it. So don't be surprised if this Major League Soccer deal, TV deal, is a big one, but not because of Major League Soccer. Now, Kartik, let's move on to just... this might be a short topic, or this might be a really kind of lengthy one. We don't know yet because we haven't had a discussion. We'll have it live here on air, which is, which broadcaster should La Liga and the Bundesliga move to in the 2020-2021 season onwards? So both La Liga and the Bundesliga are going into their last year of their rights with their current broadcasters. So the Bundesliga for the 2019-2020 season with Fox, that's the last one under the current deal. La Liga going into the last deal of the same time frame with beIN Sports. So it gives both leagues the same opportunity, but also presents them the same dilemma. Finding a broadcast partner that has a wide distribution on both the English and Spanish language side of television, as well as access to over-the-air television for those big games on Big Fox or big NBC, whatever it may be, as well as a solid over-the-top streaming offering. So having those lesser games, those Girona against Getafe games, rather than having them on television, having those available through streaming, or having access to all the games through streaming. So looking at the different partners, the hard thing, Kartik, and I've been thinking about this all week, is that it's very difficult to find one partner that has all of the options presented to you. So if you look at NBC as a potential, so NBC has, strong on the English language side with NBCSN, has access to USA and MSNBC and CNBC if needed, has over-the-air NBC, which is available nationwide, of course, has a strong Spanish language partner with Telemundo and also Universo, and then has a streaming platform with NBC Sports Gold as well as the NBCSports.com app, etc. However, with NBC, La Liga is in direct competition with the Premier League. Many of the matches that NBC would be interested in showing, maybe it's Real Madrid against Barcelona, El Clasico kicking off at, say, noon or 12:15 on a Saturday, or it could be kicking off in the morning at 10 a.m. they're going to be in direct competition to the Premier League, and actually, if anything, it could devalue or decrease the TV ratings for the Premier League, because now they're showing La Liga and the Premier League. So that might be too much for them to handle. Then you look at Fox. So Fox, of course, we've seen with the Bundesliga and how good a job they do in terms of having all the right tools. So having the big Fox, you know, over the air, FS1, FS2, having Fox Soccer Match Pass, having Fox Sports Go, Fox Deportes on the Spanish side is pretty strong in terms of being available in a lot of homes. However, the commitment level in terms of when they have NASCAR and other types of things, other sports going on, and where soccer gets lost in that hierarchy and kind of get knocked down, and we've seen the Bundesliga, a lot of those games ending up on FS2, that's a challenge too. So both NBC and Fox, I believe, to me, are not the best options. You look at ESPN. So ESPN has ESPN1, ESPN2. You could even go over the air, which I would say that that's a strong possibility where in the future, if they have a strong partner, they could take some of those games and put them on ABC, which is owned by Disney, and that's an over-the-air access opportunity there. On the streaming side, of course, ESPN Plus is fantastic. But the downfall, kind of the challenge really that they have, is that ESPN Deportes isn't available in a lot of homes and doesn't have a strong footprint in the United States. So there's kind of a downfall there for them, or a challenge, really. it's tough, Kartik. But then you got Univision. So Univision has the over-the-air access, has Univision Deportes Network, Unimas, Galavision for a lot of the other games, has a strong streaming platform, but then doesn't have an English language partner. So you look down the list and you look at DAZN. DAZN's got a really great streaming platform, but they don't have a relationship or a partnership with the TV side of things. So what for you, Kartik? What for you would be the best option, do you believe, that La Liga and the Bundesliga should take for that 2020-21 season? What should they be looking for in a partner? And do you have any recommendations?
NBC is very difficult because of their commitment to the Premier League, and the fact that Premier League kind of dovetails with what they're doing in other sports space and programming schedule wise, and also just complementing their other properties. So that might be difficult. In terms of Fox for La Liga, this is an interesting proposition. I think what you would end up seeing happen is better online access, better digital access to La Liga, less matches on television. La Liga matches, many of them tend to be later in the day in the United States. They'll conflict with American sporting events, but Fox, with Fox Sports Go and whatever other digital platforms they have, maybe they can even develop a specific La Liga package. I think they'd love to have El Clasico, and I think that would be if you go with Fox, that's going to be on network television in the U.S. Right? That's going to go from being in 15 million homes with BN to being in 100 million homes with Fox.
115, yeah.
Yeah, with Fox over the air. And then you complement that maybe with a Univision deal on the Spanish side. Maybe Fox won't take it unless they get a Deportes deal on the Spanish side. So that I think is an element of it. But I think La Liga, as much as we can quibble about the commentary style, et cetera, of Fox, that would probably be the most logical place if Fox is still interested in European club football. There is also always the possibility of Turner and BR Live. I think the BR Live platform is limited. I do think Turner would probably make a commitment. Maybe it would end up being on True TV rather than on TNT or TBS, but would make a commitment to showing a match a week. Or two matches a week on television, which might be more than Fox does. But in case, again, it's the timings. Fox shows as many Bundesliga matches as they do on FS2 and FS1 because the Bundesliga runs the traditional kickoff time for Bundesliga matches in Germany is 3:30 local time. The traditional kickoff time for matches in Spain is later local time. So, you know, you that accounting for the time difference with the U.S. and time zones in the U.S. that complicates things with American sporting events, live American sporting events. I think Turner is an option. And as far as DAZN is concerned, DAZN would have to make a sub-license deal with some television network. Perhaps that's Fox. Perhaps that's ESPN. Perhaps that's Turner. But DAZN is competing with all of those entities, as it is, for digital, particularly with ESPN. And we know the relationships there, right? So but maybe Fox and Turner, the relationship's a little better. But I think that that's unlikely. But it feels like DAZN's going to have to do something like this, grab a La Liga or grab a Bundesliga to make a splash in the U.S. market. Now, as far as the Bundesliga is concerned, I don't know. The numbers the last few weeks have had me thinking if Fox were willing to commit more to the league in this country, we're seeing – look, I don't know if people who are Bundesliga advocates know really how bad the ratings are every week, because you don't list them necessarily always on the World Soccer Talk site, or we don't read them on this podcast because they're so low. Mm-hmm. And they're under 30,000 or they're under 40,000. We've seen an uptick. And I think having a title race was a big part of it. There was a great race for fourth also, which Leverkusen won. I'm not sure that played as big a role. But I think the title race between Dortmund and Bayern kept people interested. And we saw these last 2 weeks, despite the early morning kickoff. And I have to say, with NBC and the Premier League, we've never really seen consistent over-the-air broadcasts at that time of the day. They're generally 12:30 Eastern time on Saturdays, and when we've had them on Sundays, they've been the 11:30 a.m. or 11 o'clock a.m. kickoff. So I thought those numbers were pretty good, actually, for both those Bayern matches on Big Fox, and also considering the number of affiliates in big markets, including the Fort Lauderdale-Miami market down here, which I live in, that preempted the match for infomercials.
Right.
So maybe because it's part of an international broadcast deal, they keep going with Fox. And I can't believe I'm saying this, Chris, because we've been talking about them getting off the whole time. La Liga will get off BN. That's absolutely certain.
Yeah, that's
on this Bundesliga thing, I don't know. I'm hedging now. Let's see what Fox does with it early next season. Obviously, the renegotiation must be going on now. Maybe their renewed emphasis on the league. It's a coincidence we had a title race. Maybe it's because they're trying to prove to the broadcasters trying to prove to the league that they deserve another bite at the apple with this. Mm-hmm. And there are not a whole lot of places the Bundesliga can go, honestly. Yeah. They're not going to go to NBC. Their match windows conflict directly with the Premier League. I don't think the league is attractive enough for Turner. They could go to ESPN, but they just fall in the inventory of ESPN leagues then. And they'll be reduced to largely an online property. The difference with Serie A is that Serie A, again, has some match windows that are I guess the Bundesliga has a few of those, but I still think they won't get the 40 matches a year on linear television that Serie A does, so on ESPN. I think they might want to try and see if they can work this Fox thing out going forward.
Yeah, same here, Kartik, in terms of kind of the Fox thing. The more I think about it, the more likely it looks like that Fox could be the future broadcaster for the Bundesliga, not out of demand, but more so about in terms of, well, so the La Liga, the timing is unfortunate for the Bundesliga, because with La Liga the TV rights deal being up at the same time as the Bundesliga, the Bundesliga is not going to get as much priority in terms of the bidding as La Liga would. So La Liga is definitely the league that people are more interested in terms of the broadcasters, a lot of it because of the Hispanic population in the United States and the bilinguals and the opportunity for this league to grow from where it is now to what it can be. With the Bundesliga, it pretty much is at the level, probably the highest level we can expect it to be. I don't see it getting much greater than this. And as a result of that, if I'm a TV broadcaster, Fox has done a decent job, definitely not a fantastic job, not as good as they should have done. Hasn't been awful, but I think in many ways for the Bundesliga, they might end up saying, okay, well, actually Fox is probably our best bet to have access to over-the-air television, to have access to games now and again on FS1 and FS2, and has a streaming platform that, it's expensive, but it works and it's available there. Now, La Liga, Well, actually, for the Bundesliga, I mean, this over-the-air side of things, it could be that DAZN comes in, puts in a strong offer for the streaming rights, and that for the television side of things, Fox puts in a renewal offer and keeps it on the television side. So that's a possibility there. But for La Liga, the way I look at this is in terms of all the options available to them. Their best bet would be similar to Major League Soccer, is having a partnership with, say, Fox, Univision, and ESPN coming together, doing a deal with La Liga and saying, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to share these rights. We're going to figure out between us, ourselves, like who's going to get which games. So that provides La Liga with access to over the air for Univision and for Fox from time to time. And potentially through ESPN if they decide to go to ABC. On the streaming side of things, it gives them opportunities to have their games available through ESPN Plus and Fox Soccer Match Pass, Fox Sports Go, Univision Deportes app too. And that would put an opportunity for those broadcasters to work together to figure out, okay, how do we take turns with this? Who gets El Clasico in the first one? Who gets the second one? Let's rotate those through. It also gives access to the Spanish language side, strong impact there across the United States. That, to me, would be an ideal situation where La Liga says, okay, this is the best of the best. Now, whether or not those broadcasters are going to be interested in doing a deal like that, if they're not, maybe a partnership between ESPN and Univision, where Univision says, okay, we want, because of the success we've had with the UEFA Champions League in Spanish, we want to have La Liga. So on the Spanish side of things, that's a strong, and also with Univision losing the rights to the World Cup, that's a strong offering there. Now, they don't have the English language partner on that side of things, so maybe ESPN comes and says, okay, let's do a deal together. ESPN will focus on the English language side and have games on, of course, on television and the smaller games, lesser teams on the streaming platform. Lots of different options. I mean, and then at the end of the day, Kartik, there isn't one provider that is a perfect fit, which is the challenge for these leagues. NBC, with the Premier League, they've been lucky, they've been very fortunate that NBC has checks off all the boxes of all the things they're looking for, that the Premier League would be looking for. And all these other leagues, it's there's no one provider that has all those checkboxes. They have, so that's why we need kind of that partnership. And whether those companies can come together, we'll have to wait and see. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. So first up is Dark Volta. He says, hard to disagree with you guys on the knockout format. I enjoy, this is talking about Major League Soccer, I enjoy the title races of the different leagues, but they are by no means as engaging as the knockout rounds of the Champions League or the World Cup. For Major League Soccer specifically, playoffs should really have far fewer slots, not 60%. So yeah, so definitely in terms of the teams qualifying for the playoffs, it should not be 60% of the teams. Happily Eggs says, I am desperate to see soccer succeed and build in the US. Strange, really, because I'm a Brit living in Britain. I want to see it succeed because I think successful US soccer would be a platform for football worldwide. It would become a driving force for the evolution of the game. Soccer, to give its, well, he says football, to give its correct name, is already a universally played sport. If football in the US became one of the more subscribed to sports in the country, it would add so much more dynamism to the sports worldwide. Inevitably, you would see a FIFA Champions League instead of a UEFA Champions League, which they're already talking about. This would be good for football in all areas of the world. Hopefully, this might lead to the sharing of wealth around to some of the poorer countries. Growing Major League Soccer and soccer in general in the US should be about turning your game into my game. You would think that Major League Soccer would be organizing in local areas throughout the country, setting up events and games to attract more new viewers and fans. On a different subject, making games more significant. It may not be necessary to have promotion relegation. It's only necessary to have some sort of penalization period for finishing bottom. Maybe a 3-point deduction from the start of the next season. I'm sure there are brighter sparks than me that can develop penalization systems to simulate relegation. So, Happily Eggs, thanks for the comments there, all the way from the UK. Some good points there, Kartik, about Major League Soccer and what it can do.
Yeah, some very, very good points. And I think Happily Eggs, hopefully, what he has written, he or she has written, would be music to the ears of MLS executives. But unfortunately, they don't. Their number of community initiatives, things that they've done on the grassroots level has contracted. When you and I had the disagreement a few weeks ago about the Premier League Fan Fest, I argued MLS used to do a lot of that stuff in the time period where the league was not really on solid footing financially. And they were looking for any edge to engage potential soccer fans, existing soccer fans, people who love global football, et cetera. Since about 2014, it actually kind of coincides with New York City FC coming into the league for whatever reason. Maybe it's a coincidence. And Orlando City coming into the league, their tact has changed as far as those things are concerned. They're very much operating themselves in a vacuum. This is even true of the way they operate their website. Their website at one point, Chris, as you remember, tried to be a destination for global football content.
Yep.
And even discussions of the Premier League and the Bundesliga and the leagues that were more popular in the United States. So you'd see La Liga, Bundesliga, Premier League content, Serie A, those four leagues basically, content on the MLS site. Now it's just, it's again a propaganda, it's a corporate league website. Again, that kind of changed around 2014, 2015. So, Happily Eggs has written, I subscribe to, but I think it's probably going to find no reception from the execs right now.
It's interesting because of the Major League Soccer, soccer.com, which the domain name is horrible. But when the decision was made many, many years ago to kind of really split the content and say, okay, that's rather than focusing on the world's game and trying to attract people that are interested in everything soccer-wise, let's focus it on 100% on Major League Soccer. And in some ways, what it has done in many ways is that it's... for those soccer fans who are maybe not hardcore Major League Soccer fans, it's compartmentalized the two different areas. So you've got the MLS crowd that goes to the MLSsoccer.com and goes to the MLS Reddit and stays in those areas where they can discuss their game and what they think of the league. And then everyone else has gone elsewhere. So in many ways, I think Major League Soccer has lost that audience. And although they probably would not admit it, in hindsight, that decision to go ahead and kind of really not focus on the rest of soccer, only focusing on Major League Soccer, has probably lost some of their audience, where somebody might be going to Major League Soccer for news about U.S. soccer, of course, but also about some news, what's happening in the Bundesliga, what's happening to different stories. Yeah, I guess from a marketing point of view, it definitely has had an impact. Ted S. says on Twitter, he says, any chance can La Liga pull out of their U.S. rights contract with beIN Sports early? Now, this is something I wouldn't be surprised if the discussions have been had where La Liga looked at their contract with beIN Sports and said, okay, based on this contract, is there any way that we can pull out of this? Or is there any way that we can go ahead and take some of these games and do a separate deal, kind of do a deal with some other broadcaster and figure out a way to work together to really kind of pull some of these games from beIN and have them shown elsewhere. Whether or not that happened, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did happen. At least those discussions were had. But for beIN Sports, I mean, really, at this time, I mean, La Liga is really the hook. If beIN Sports lost La Liga, that would be a huge blow. I mean, you'd have Ligue 1, which while it's an okay league, and the viewership is tiny, even for PSG games. And you have Copa Libertadores, you have Copa Sudamericana, you have the Turkish league. But really, if La Liga leaves beIN Sports, that kills beIN Sports as we know it. So to answer Ted's question, I don't think so, because beIN Sports is going to hold on to that contract for as long as they can, and to keep alive, to find a way to do a deal with DirecTV and Comcast and try to find a way to grow and survive. Rico Richardson says, I don't think it's fair to compare the international media markets to the American markets. A certain success from outside the U.S. doesn't always mean that it's even relevant here in the U.S. Traditionally, small markets aren't always attractive. Soccer isn't there yet, or at least Major League Soccer. To win the American audience for soccer, soccer has to adapt to it. He says, riddle me this. Is the mission for soccer in the U.S. to cater to the traditional soccer fan or grow new soccer fans? And my answer to that question would be it's both. It's you need to appeal to the current soccer fans, the traditional soccer fans, and you need to grow that audience. And I would say that NBC Sports has that formula correct in terms of the way they present soccer. Is they don't talk down to the audience. They don't try to change the terminology. They don't try and change the way that soccer is presented. They're presenting it in a very traditional way. And at the same time, and they've shown this in terms of the ratings and the increase in number of people interested in the Premier League, they have grown that fan base. As opposed to other leagues, other broadcasters, Fox is a perfect example where many, many different attempts to dumb down the coverage. And, U.S. Women's National Team winning the Women's World Cup, they'll stand by those numbers and say, okay, look, it's working for us. That was based on the U.S. Women's National Team, the team itself, not on the coverage, and the team doing so well. That's why those ratings were so high. It was not because of the coverage. So some good points there from Rico. Brian Hoblin says, I just got to listening to last week's pod. I loved it. I loved what you guys said about the ridiculousness of MLS playoffs. The true champion will always be the Supporters' Shield winner in my eyes. And Brian, I agree with you, but if you ask most Major League Soccer fans to go back, say, for the last 5 years and to tell us who was the Supporters' Shield winner, I think most of them would be hard-pressed to remember who it was. Even our Miami Fusion back in the day, back in the early 2000s, won the Supporters' Shield. But look at them now.
An issue with that is that there's an unbalanced schedule. So
yeah.
I tend to look at the Supporters' Shield winner. I agree with Brian, but I do put that caveat on it. It's not quite as clean as it is in some other leagues because the schedule is unbalanced. Now, until for a few years, the schedule was perfectly balanced when there were 18 teams in the league before before Orlando or New York City FC came into the league. So I think for three successive seasons, from 2012 to 2014, the schedule was balanced. And if you look at those three seasons, the Supporters' Shield winner was the legitimate winner of the league, in my opinion.
All right. Last but not least, and Kartik, I'm going to give this one to you to answer this one. It's from Raymond Orozco, and he says, I was talking to a MLS fan just recently. He told me that he believes Major League Soccer isn't that far off from the top European competition. He told me that a top MLS team would be competing in the Dutch League for a title, and look at Ajax. They were seconds away from being in the Champions League final. Does the media really play that big of a role in that type of delusional ideology?
Yes, the media has played a big role in that. I think they're not quite as bad as they used to be with that. In fact, I think if anything, following the U.S. not qualifying for the 2018 World Cup in October 2017, they flipped almost entirely to being much more critical of the level of play in MLS, seeing the correlation with the U.S. men's national team and the lack of young players coming through the system, lack of young players getting minutes in MLS, seeing more metrics about that, although that's improved in 2019. The question about where MLS would fit, I don't know. I mean, Chris, even 10 years ago when we used to have our site Major League Soccer Talk, and I would write an article about something, you'd have people leaving comments that MLS teams that the bottom teams in Serie A would be the worst teams in MLS, which at the time was absolutely absurd. And you'd see things like Frosinone and Parma, they would be horrible in MLS because it's more competitive, blah blah blah, all nonsense. Now, in terms of comparing MLS to leagues in Europe, it's very difficult because it's apples to oranges. In MLS's defense, or in the defense of MLS's players, clubs in Europe don't have to travel 2,500 miles in economy class, and that's the fault of the league and the league and the players' union for negotiating a deal where they have limited charter flights. They don't have to play in the hottest months of the year when it's 100 degrees out, affecting the quality of play, affecting whether you train as vigorously as you would, affecting even whether you train at all. So I think there are a lot of factors that limit our ability to compare the leagues or compare the level of players. Let's say that the leagues are what they are, right? MLS has chosen to play on this calendar. They've chosen to limit charter flights. They've chosen to schedule midweek matches where teams are traveling 3,000 miles. The teams going from Los Angeles to Boston or Orlando to Vancouver, whatever. So that all affects the quality of play. And unless they solve some of those issues, they're never going to be comparable in terms of the optics to a European league ever. Period. I don't care who they have playing here. I think there are a lot of mitigating factors that MLS proponents just don't understand and they don't get.
Yeah, to me, it's a silly conversation to even have in the first place. I mean, we had Alexi Lalas a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago, talking about how he thought that Major League Soccer teams would finish about mid-table in the Premier League. Those types of conversations. To me, it's silly, but just because rather than focusing on other leagues, it's more important to me to focus on the league in front of you.
In fairness to Lalas, the team he picked at the time, the Houston Dynamo, had a pretty good team. So I still think it was a reach, but he then, when he was on the Stephen Cohen and Nick Geber show, and once they pressed him, he mentioned the team he was thinking of that could finish mid-table in the Premier League. It was like, oh, so he's not saying San Jose would finish mid-table, you know, right? He's saying Houston, who at the time were a dominant team in the league. So, but yeah, continue.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that that debate can go on and on for hours. We could have this debate where, you mean, where does Major League Soccer teams rank? Well, you just have to look in the region. You look at the CONCACAF Champions League, and we see where they're ranked. I mean, yes, there's other factors in terms of the schedule, the calendar, and the games. I mean, early in the MLS season or before the MLS season begins, those types of mitigating factors. But to me, it's just a silly conversation to have anyway, just because it's almost like when people have that conversation, it's either to make MLS look bad or to make MLS look good. And a way to justify, like this person that said to Raymond in terms of the Ajax and the Dutch league, and MLS is right there at that level. Well, that person is trying to boost up the level, the perception of the level of MLS.
Well, that particular thing, there is no way there is an MLS team anywhere close to Ajax.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That particular. So we get the example of Scotland a lot, and this is where nuance is important. And the people who make the argument on one side want to just say MLS is the worst thing. It's like the conference in England, which is absurd. And the people who are on the other side want to say it's like the Premier League, which is also absurd. So we have to have a lot of nuance with this. MLS is spending, the level of player, taking out all the factors I talked about of travel and charter, non-charter flights, etc., and playing in the hottest months. Are their pay are they comparable to a majority of the teams in Scotland and in the Netherlands? Yes. However, those leagues are like typical European leagues. An MLS team is nowhere near Celtic's level of spending or Celtic's level of quality in their squad. Okay, now could they compete with just about every other team in Scotland? Potentially, the top MLS teams could. Although MLS teams don't defend at all, so that's an issue. I mean, maybe they'd be a lot of 5-4 games. Same thing in the Netherlands. Could they compete with the bulk of the league? Yeah, the top MLS teams probably could. Could they compete with Ajax or PSV the way those two sides fared this year? No way. No way at all. So when we take leagues as a monolith, and that's an American thing, right? Also to say, oh, well, because there's an enforced parity in American sporting culture and in American sporting leagues, non-college. You know, college is much more like European football, but in the American professional leagues. So we take this, we make these universal declarations. Yeah, I think that all things being equal, if they weren't apples to oranges, but they were apples to apples, formats were similar. Yeah, most MLS teams or most top MLS teams could compete in Scotland and Netherlands with the bulk of the league. Could they compete with Ajax? No way. Could they compete with Celtic? No way.
Yeah, and also you look at the calendar too in terms of that marathon of a season, how long it is, and there's so many factors, which is why I usually don't get into those conversations or discussions, because it's a no-win situation. You could talk on for hours, and there's so many different variables involved. It is really, like you said, Kartik, it is an apples to oranges comparison, and it's a comparison that usually I step away from, because it just anyway, unless there's a World League, which could happen in the future, where there's a World League where you take some of the top teams from the different leagues from around the world and have an international tournament, not a cup tournament in the summer, but an actual, almost like a Champions League, a World Champions League, kind of going back to what Happily Egg said before too, kind of a FIFA Champions League, then you could say, okay, all right, now stepping up and over a course of a few years, here's how the teams from the different countries really kind of what their level is at. I mean, are they a level of an Ajax? No. Are they a level of some other team from Scotland? Yes, but so on and so forth. But interesting conversation, interesting comment there that Raymond got. And for listeners too, if you hear some wild and crazy thoughts or have any questions for us, you want to learn more about streaming or what's the best platforms to watch soccer on, you let us know. We'd love to read those out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. So, Kartik, thank you for sticking with us. I know you're got a bit of a cold, so I appreciate you giving it 100%. But for listeners who want to follow you on Twitter and find out the latest thoughts, you know, rants and raves and all those things during the week until the next podcast, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at KKFLA737.
All right, you can find me at World Soccer Talk. Thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, heading into another weekend of soccer, we've got the, I think, the last weekend of Serie A. We've got Copa del Rey final. We've got DFL Pokal. We've got some Major League Soccer games too, as well as games from around the world. Playoffs, of course. Don't forget Monday's championship playoff. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.